context that's bound to a window, and you can then proceed to actually use the GL API to render the gears or more interesting things. And then typically once you have a frame rendered, you have to go back into actually defining it again to actually make the frame visible in the display system you're running on. So we've had different APIs for different Windows systems in the past, and the EGL has come up as two different things really, primarily, and then the E in EGL stands for embedded. So it was designed as an embedded binding API. So for cases where you want to run EGL on an embedded device and you don't have a traditional Windows system like X or Windows or this like, you could go through the same steps and create a window for your frame buffer or a window for whatever graphics device you have on your system. You can create a context, you can bind this stuff, and then you can use GL as if you were on that desktop or at this point you render with GL again, and you there's a swap buffer in EGL, so that once you render your frame, you go back and interact with EGL again, and you can display that frame. It's also useful on all these other systems I mentioned. You can use EGL on Windows, on Apple, on macOS X, you can use it on X. And the idea is that all these binding APIs were actually very similar. They all concern themselves with how to pick a config for the service you're going to render into. So this is a config should be describes what attributes are available. Do you have a double buffer? Do you have a stencil or depth or auxiliary buffers? And what is the swap policy? A lot of parameters on how EGL interacts with the Windows system are described in this config. So you pick a config, then you go out and pick a match and native window from the Windows system, and you use these to create a context. So you go through all these same steps on all these APIs. So it was actually easy to consolidate these three different APIs into EGL, and then just have a few entry points that take the native types, and then from there on, it's all EGL types. You can create EGL surface from an X window, you can create EGL surface from a Windows window, you can create EGL surface from a Linux framework. So that's what EGL is. It's the consolidation of these different APIs, as well as the addition of being able to run a framework or embedded display system. Another thing that was introduced with EGL is the ability to bind different APIs. So traditionally with GLX and the other native binding APIs, you always bind OpenGL. So you go through the steps of creating the context and config, and you make that current, and then you have GL. And you can query that GL implementation about different extensions and what other optional capabilities it has. But at the end of the day, it's OpenGL, and that's all you get. But with EGL, they Kronos introduced the option of selecting different APIs to bind to that context. So in addition to OpenGL, they came up with two different subsets of GL. One is the embedded subset version 1, and then they did an embedded subset version 2. And the best, easiest way to think about these two subsets is that the subset 1 is basically the subset that's usable on fixed platform hardware, and ES2 is programmable hardware. And so it's all shaders for ES2, and for ES1 there is no shaders in the core API, but there are extensions you can use shaders with ES1. But ideally, the simplest way to think of this is that ES1 is fixed function, ES2 is programmable hardware. So they introduced these two new APIs, and also there's OpenVG, which is a 2D vector drawing API, and they introduced this OpenMax is, I think, one of their video decoding APIs. So there are quite a few APIs, and there are different APIs in the works, and they may or may not have them. But the new thing was that before creating a context, you actually have to say, I want to create a context for OpenVG, or I want to create an ES2 context. But once you've found that context, you can go and use the OpenVG API to render to it. You can use OpenGL, and then at the end of the day, you go out and do a swap buffer again, and the OpenGL or OpenVG or whatever you render in the back buffer, it swaps to the native window form. So
comes visible on the screen, you don't draw left frame.
So Mesa has an ETL extension and has had one for quite a while. I think it goes back 6 or 7 years. And I didn't check to get it out, but it's been around for quite a few years, but it always only worked for either DRI1 or it works with the Gallium drivers too. So and it has GLX project, so we can run ETL on top of GLX. And then recently I added a backend an implementation that runs ETL directly on the DRI2 driver. So you can load the DRI2 drivers we use in GLX, load the same driver, and then implement ETL in terms of that DRI driver API. So you can bind the driver, bind the context, and it's a little less overhead than with the ETL and GLX, and doing it this way lets us do some of the more interesting extensions in ETL as well. Additionally, let me work with that part. One of the things that interesting extensions in ETL is the ETL image extension. Again, ETL has the different APIs. You can render using OpenVG, or you can render using OpenGL. But one of the things that came up was it would be nice to be able to render things with OpenVG, and then maybe use that as a texture in OpenGL. So there was a need for trying to share these resources across the different APIs. And that's what ETL image originally was and still is designed for. So an ETL image is just, think of it as a texture or a render buffer. It's essentially a 2D buffer of pixels, typically, that you can create from a resource in one of these client APIs. So you can say, here's my OpenVG surface, I want to make it into an ETL image. But you can say, I have a texture over here, and I want to bind an ETL image to that texture. So you can use that ETL image as a texture with your texture. Or you could say you want to bind an ETL image as a render buffer. So there is a number of different bindings that let you take one of these ETL images and bind into one of the existing client objects. Or you can create, and you can also go the other way. Say I have a render buffer here that I render things into, and I want to take it out, use it as an ETL image, and use it over in OpenVG, for example, for 2D rendering. So it's a mechanism for sharing resources between client APIs, rendering one, texturing the other with the same data. And it's all ideally zero copy, so you can use the same buffer, render to it with a GPU, you leave it down in memory, and you go and you texture from it without copying it around. So, and it integrates with the Windows system too, so if you're on Edge, you can create an ETL image from a pixmap. So you can take a pixmap, create the image, and you can set that image as a texture. And then now this actually implements texture from pixmap that we have in GLX. So there's a way to do that under ETL. It's a few extra steps. It's a different way to do it, but the end result is the same, that we can take a pixmap and use it as a texture with zero cropping. So what I've done in Mesa also, on top of all this, so we have those implementations. They're implemented in our Mesa driver. When we run the Mesa ETL driver, we can create all these ETL images from different OpenGL resources. We can bind them as a texture, we can bind them to a render buffer. So if you're running Gallium, you can bind that. The Gallium drivers actually have an OpenVG implementation. The DRI drivers only support OpenGL and GLES1 and 2. But the image extension is available. And one of the interesting things that I've done on top of the image functionality is integrated with kernel mode zone. We came up with an extension in Mesa that lets you create an image, ETL image, from some other places. Typically, you create an ETL image from one of these resources in a client API, take a random buffer, create the image. But this extension lets you allocate an image, and which is basically allocated from not from an existing resource, but just from directly from the vendor. And when you allocate it, you can specify a few hints, like you want to use it for scanout, or you can say that you want to share it with a different process. And the extension lets you access some of the gem details of the object, so you can ask the extension to get the public name for the underlying gem buffer, isn't it? You can pass that public name to a different process, which can again create an ETL image from that box. So now we have two processes sharing an ETL image based on the same buffer. So we can pass buffers around. And the other thing is we can ask for the gem handle, the in process identifier we use to reference the buffers, which is also the ID that we use to return the monster. So we can create the image, we can say we want to use it for scanner, then we can bind it into the OpenGL, translate render to it as a render buffer with an FDO, for example. And once we've done that, we can go back, take over the ETL image, and we can get that hint, create a KMS current motion in frame buffer object, and then tell current motion to scan out from this image. So once you put the pieces together, we have the option to run ETL on the frame buffer directly. So this doesn't use X, this doesn't require any Windows system. It lets you allocate a scan out buffer, render to it with accelerated OpenGL, and then use it to set a mode, or use it with page script, so you can have two images around you, render to one, page script to that, then once you have page script, you render to the other, and then page script to that, so you can do double buffering, or you can do triple buffering if you want to do that. So it's basically up to the application to allocate a set of ETL images, render to them, and free them when it goes idle, and then use the KMS API to set the image you want to scan out from. And it works naturally because the KMS API works with multi-head. It works with you can have one big frame buffer, you can have different scan out buffers per output. And all this is naturally supported with this because it's just a tiny little integration between the two APIs. So you can allocate two different outputs and set them to two different modes, or to two different outputs. Or you can allocate one big buffer and you can ask you two CTCs to scan out that same buffer and show the same image on two outputs. So it has all the features that Render has because we're just using the online KMS. But it's that you integrate that with OpenGL Render. And so one thing, last thing I want to mention about ETL is that we're actually working on an official Chronos extension to let us share images between processes. So what we have in Mesa right now is Mesa DRM-specific extension that if you have DRM, you can allocate the hand, you can talk to current mode setting, and this works very well if you have a Mesa and Linux-based system. But there's been a lot of interest in sharing images across processes. And Mozilla, for example, they want this so that they can render a tab content in one process, and then in a different, the main window process, they can take that tab and pass it into the browser, so they can have out-of-process accelerated rendering of different tabs, and then integrate all that in one window by compositing the different ETL images. And so the people from Australia are taking part in this, they're interested in the feature, and other industry and other companies are part of the process. And we're at this point that we actually have a final draft of the extension, and it's similar to what we have, except that there is some authentication around it, which is also part of the extension. So essentially, the process you want to share the image with has to generate a system-wide ID for the year for that process, which then has to, by IPC or some other means, has to communicate to that other process that I want to share the image. So if I want to share the image here with the process over here, I have his ID or his address, basically, and I say share this image to this address. And then that gives me another unique system-wide unique ID that I can pass through IPC again to that process, to then open that unique ID. And it's that the end result is the same as what we have with the DRM Mesa extension, that you end up with a ETL image that's based on the same underlying kernel buffer, but this doesn't actually involve any DRM or API
this is a Chronos extension without any base of your memory. So it's something that can be implemented by different ETL vendors, different ETL stack can implement this facility as well.
Alright, so last point, this is a short talk, but I just want to say about the class 1 and class 2, the embedded subsets, they're also now available in Mesa. They've been available for Gallium drivers for a while, because in Gallium you can have different state trackers that interpret different APIs. So in the Gallium world, it's just another API alongside OpenGL and OpenVG that already exist. So these are different state trackers that pass a different subset of the GL standard and talk to the same Gallium language. But DRI drivers, there was no way to provide this API. We always only provide the full OpenGL API. And there are a few semantic differences. It's not a strict subset. And it's also nice if you're actually working on a GL ES application that you compile it against the GL ES library instead of the full GL library. So that adds if you use a GL symbol, like you step outside the subset. So there's a definitely benefit to having a real class 2 library and implementation available. And that's now available in Mesa. What I did was I added the feature to the DRI interface to create a context for a specific API. So when you load a DRI driver, you can see it has the existing old interfaces. But there's a new entry point that lets you say, when I create this context, I'm going to use it with a class 2 API or a class 1 or maybe full desktop OpenGL. So that way, the DRI driver can initialize the dispatch tables and the entry points so that it checks the parameters according to the ES2 spec. So we don't pass in enums that are not valid to ES2. We don't call entry points that are not valid. So all this allows the driver to initialize the entry point correctly. And then we have end user libraries, class 1 and class 2 of SO that you link to. So again, it's very similar to how full GL works, but we just need that feature to specify what API you're working with. And all this is available, and there are just very cheap and specific code for this. Most of this is basically managing the Mesa dispatch tables and initializing the right API. And there's not much available that individual drivers need to do to provide once the API is important. The way I set it up is that if a driver doesn't do anything, then it doesn't advertise anything else than put over GL. But it's a pretty simple task of sitting down and looking at the driver. Can it support the USM2 sharing language? Does it have the features that otherwise the USM that class 2 requires? And if all that's in place, you can set the bit, and then the DRI and EGL loader will do the rest. Advertise the API and set it up correctly when the user adds it. So it's fairly similar to enable this in the other drivers, but I only did it for Intel. And it came together pretty nicely with our JSON language compiler paper as well, because Ken was able to take that compiler and then go through and make sure that it supports the different subsets that class 2 uses. So, it's actually a pretty good implementation now. We have this chain language in place, the APIs in place, and we support quite a few of the ETL event extensions. So that's what I wanted to say here. I thought about maybe looking through the APIs for hooking up a DRI driver to the event extensions, because there is a few extra DRI driver extensions that a driver has to advertise if they want to provide the PGL image extensions. So we need to be able to, say, create the PGL image in this case. So basically, it's very similar to the entry points that the extension provides, but it has to be supported by the DRI driver. And the mechanism is in place there to see if the extension is available, if this advertises the extensions. But again, I only implement the extensions for the DRI driver, but there's nothing new. If the driver supports DRI 2, it's a matter of basically exporting some of that functionality, the hook into the memory manual to allocate the surface, and then return that. You set that as a texture or set as a random block. So it is, in many cases, just a matter of grabbing existing functionality in the driver and providing as UI graphics. All right, so that's it. And it runs this. So this is an example of running on X, running over here. And this is a very different gears than the GLX gears that we all know, because this is less two. So there's no fixed function, the transformation pipeline, there's no material, there's no lighting, there's nothing there. So the shaders do all the matrix math, doing the transformations, they do all the lighting, the shading. So there's really nothing of all that traditional functionality available. So ES2, it's a very small API, it's 150 endpoints or so, and it's all about shaders. And of course, it uses ETL to talk to the X server to bind an X window to an ETL surface and then bind that to an ETL context. And then it renders the views using ES2 with the shaders and all. And yet, it looks like the good old GLX service, but it is actually quite a different way to get there. Yeah, I had a new example of ETL and KMS, but that's out of date. But I have, of course, all this infrastructure is useful for writing your own display server if you wanted to do so. It's basically building blocks that they should do something like Wayland or other display services. We could also have an X server that runs with the Glamour acceleration architecture that Eric started. So you could start off X on current mode setting, use ETL and the Glamour acceleration architecture to accelerate the X engine points. And then that way you have an X server that runs entirely on GPLS2 and current mode setting. Any
questions?
You said the PGL image extension, traditional one, cannot share in processes, is it correct?
Yes, that's not part of the original PGL image extension. The feature they were trying to provide with their original extension was that you typically render stuff with a 2D API, and then you end up using that one to using as a texture in OpenGL. So you use, for instance, high quality 2D with OpenVG, and then maybe you want to use that in a cover for animation that's spinning on a cube. So you want to use that end result as texture in OpenGL. So then there's really no way to share these results between the different APIs, and that's what PGL image was meant to solve here.
Can you use the PGL image to try, for example, a composite replication on the manager?
On the X.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's actually two ways you take the complete map. There's one that basically just lets you create an ETL surface from a text bitmap and then find that as a texture. And then there's the other way that lets you create an ETL image from the surface and use that as a texture, which is a more accurate way.
Good. My question is, usually the compositor and the implementation around as different processes that you use all the time. And I'm not sure how that works with the ETL image.
But the compositor and the applications? Well, so in this case, if you're not doing it on the X, then the image sharing is done through X. So you have a pixmap that the window gets redirected, which means that you can then the compositor can ask for the pixmap that backs that window. So you get the pixmap from the X server. And then once you have the pixmap, you can use that as a texture. And the way that works is through DRI2, so we ask for the handle for that pixmap, and we bind it to use a handle to create the image. So So when you create an ETL image from an Excel feed time, it's also a zero copy operation in the same way that the GLX session feed time is zero copy because we just exchange the underlying gem handles and bracket it in the ETL image. So you could definitely write Pumpkins or GNOME Shell or any of the existing processors could work with them with ETL as well. All right. I guess that's the end of today.